39. They would look for her. She was a fugitive locked in a cage in a single giant building. They would hunt her down. Charlotte's mind raced. If the man she attacked died there in the hallway, she might have until the end of shift before he was discovered and they started looking for her. If he found help, it could be hours. But they had to have heard the gun going off, right? They would save his life. She hoped they would save his life. She opened a crate where she'd seen a medical kit. Wrong crate. It was the next one. She dug the kit out and undid her coveralls, tearing at the snaps. Wiggling her arms out, she saw the grisly wound. Dark red blood puckered from a hole in her arm and streaked down to her elbow. She reached around and winced as her fingers found the exit. Her arm was numb from the wound down. From the wound up, it was throbbing. She tore a roll of gauze open with her teeth, then wrapped it under her armpit and around, sent the roll behind her neck and across her other shoulder to keep it all in place. Finally, another few laps across the wound. She'd forgotten a pad, a compress, didn't feel like doing it again. Instead, she just made the last wrap as tight as she could tolerate before cinching the end. As far as dressings went, it was a train wreck. Everything from basic training had gone out the window during the fight and after. Just impulse and reflex. Charlotte closed the lid on the bin, saw the blood left on the latch, and realized she'd have to think more clearly to get through this. She opened the case back up, grabbed another roll of gauze, and cleaned up after herself, then checked the floor outside the lifts. It was a mess. She went back for a small bottle of alcohol, remember where she'd seen a huge jug of industrial cleaner, grabbed that plus more gauze, wiped everything up. Took her time. Couldn't get in too big a hurry. The bundle of soiled and stained cloth went back in the bin, the lid kicked shut. Satisfied with the condition of the floor, she hurried to the barracks. Her cot made it obvious that someone lived there. The other mattresses were bare. Before she fixed this, she stripped down, grabbed another pair of coveralls, and went to the bathroom. After washing her hands and face, and the bright spill of blood down her neck and between her breasts, she cleaned the sink and changed. The red coveralls went into her footlocker. If they looked in there, she was screwed. She pulled the covers off her bed, grabbed her pillow, and made sure everything else was straight. Back in the warehouse, she opened the hangar door on the drone lift and threw her things inside. She went to the shelves and gathered rations and water, added this, another small medical kit. Inside the bin of first aid gear, she discovered the microphone, which she must have dropped earlier while grabbing the gauze. This and two flashlights and a spare set of batteries went inside the lift as well. It was the last place anyone would look. The door was practically invisible, unless you knew what to search for. It only came up to her knees and was the same color as the wall. She considered crawling inside right then. Would just need to outlast the first thorough search of the level. They would concentrate on the shelving units, the stacks, and think the place was clear. Move on to the many other warrens in which she could be hiding. But before she waited that out, there was the microphone coiled up that she had worked so hard to acquire. There was the radio. She had a few hours, she told herself. This wouldn't be the first place they'd check. Surely she had a few hours. Dizzy from lack of sleep and loss of blood, she made her way to the flight control room and pulled the plastic sheet from the radio. Patting her chest, she remembered she'd changed coveralls. And besides, that driver was gone. She searched the bench for another, found one, and removed the panel from the side of the unit. The board she wasn't sure about was already installed. It was a simple matter of plugging the microphone in. She didn't bother with affixing it to the side panel or closing anything up. She checked the seating of the control boards. It was a lot like a computer, all the parts slotting together. But she was no electrician. She had no idea if there was anything else, anything missing. And no way in hell was she going on another run for parts. She powered up the unit and selected the channel marked 18. She waited. Adjusting the squelch, she brought enough static into the speakers to make sure the unit was on. There was no traffic on the channel. Squeezing the microphone put an end to the static, which was a good sign. Weary and hurting and fearful for herself as well as her brother, Charlotte managed to smile. The click of the microphone back through the speakers was a small victory. "Can anyone read me?" she asked. She propped one elbow on the desk, her other arm hanging useless by her side. She tried again. "Anyone out there with ears on, please come back." Static. Which didn't prove anything. Charlotte could very well imagine the radio sitting miles away in this silo somewhere, All the operators around them slouched over, dead. Her brother had told her about the time he had ended a silo with the press of a button. He had come to her with his eyes shining in the middle of the night and told her all about it. And now this other silo was gone. Or maybe her radio wasn't broadcasting. She wasn't thinking straight, needed to troubleshoot before she jumped to conclusions. Reaching for the dial, she immediately thought of the other silo she and her brother had eavesdropped in on. This neighboring silo with a handful of survivors who liked to chat back and forth and play games like hide and find with their radios. If she remembered right, the mayor of 18 had somehow transmitted on this other frequency before. Charlotte clicked over to 17 to test her mic, see if anyone would respond, forgetting the late hour. She used her old call sign from the Air Force out of habit. "Hello, hello? This is Charlie 24. Anyone read me?" She listened to static, was about to switch over to another channel, when a voice broke through, shaky and distant.
"Yes? Hello? Can you hear us?"
Charlotte squeezed the microphone again, the pain in her shoulder momentarily gone, this connection with a strange voice like a shot of adrenaline.
"I hear you, yes. You can read me okay?"
"What the hell is going on over there? We can't get through to you. The tunnel. There's rubble in the tunnel. No one will respond. We're trapped over here."
Charlotte tried to make sense of this. She double-checked the transmit frequency. "Slow down," she said, and took a deep breath, took her own advice.
"Where are you? What's going on? Is this Shirley? We're stuck over here in this other place. Everything's rusted. People are panicking. You've got to get us out of here."
Charlotte didn't know whether to answer or simply power the units down and try again later. It felt as though she had butted into the middle of a conversation, confusing one of the parties. Another voice chimed in, supporting her theory.
"That's not Shirley,"
someone said, a woman's voice.
"Shirley's dead."
Charlotte adjusted the volume. She listened intently. For a moment, she forgot the man dying in the hallway below, the man she had stabbed, the wound in her arm. She forgot about those who must be coming after her, searching for her. She listened instead with great interest to this conversation on Channel 17, this voice that sounded vaguely familiar.
"Who is this?"
the first voice, the male voice, asked. There was a pause. Charlotte didn't know whom he was asking, whom he expected an answer from. She lifted the microphone to her lips, but someone else answered.
"This is Juliet."
The voice was labored and weary.
"Jules, where are you? What do you mean Shirley's dead?"
Another burst of static, another dreadful pause.
"I mean they're all dead," she said, "and so are we."
A burst of static.
"I killed us all."